This is CliffCentral.com.
Here's an interesting message. You people are retarded when it comes to maths.
Hey, now, baby.
I can add. I get these things. Don't you dare lump me in with these three.
How dare you?
Yes, we are terrible at
mathematics.
We can't do the mathematics.
Do you know who has to be really good at maths? Because otherwise they're not going to be able to calculate any kind of profit into their business. Because if you are bad at maths and you're an actuary, Mubs, you, first of all, you can't become an actuary if you're bad at maths. I remember one dude who was at school with me. He was a maths genius. Guess what he did?
He became an actuary.
Right. Because they snap him up like hotcakes. Mm. If you can figure out those risks and those margins, and you can see how to put an insurance business together, you are in the very top percentile of smart people when it comes to figuring out numbers. And Sven is one of those people. We spoke to Sven just last week from One Plan about, we spoke about a bunch of things, but mostly like winter diseases and what the big claims are for winter. Found out some interesting facts. People slip and fall more in the winter. I didn't know that. And today we thought we'd talk about the National Health Insurance, because everyone is bandying this term about like they know what they're talking about. I don't know, so our lady doesn't waste an opportunity to get on TV and to start grandstanding about how he's going to make universal free basic education, basic health care available to everybody. But is it even possible? And before you think, oh, well, this doesn't affect me because I've got a private medical aid, or because I don't have any medical aid, I'll just take whatever they give me. It'll be better than nothing. Don't be ignorant, because this is exactly wrong. This is going to affect all of us. And I thought, rather than just make it up or debate stuff that we don't understand, let's get Sven in. Sven Lorencik, how are you, sir? Nice to see you.
I'm excellent. Thank you very much. Just that intro was very misleading.
Why?
Because I'm not the clever mathematician stats guy. We have those guys. Yeah. I'm not that guy. I'm silly when it comes to numbers.
See proof that people like you and me can actually get somewhere in life.
Exactly. Can actually earn a decent living in this world.
But they are smart, right?
They're
these
super smart.
These actuaries
absolutely
are.
Yeah.
And probably a bit socially inept.
You know, I don't want to be the one saying it. You said it, but they definitely savants in a certain respect. So
do you have to pay a lot of money for these people?
Yeah, absolutely. And
because they're rare, right?
Yeah, they're rare. And I think, you know, to find the right person with the right blend of skills, you know, because you need some business aptitude. You need to have the statistical analysis and that ability. So to find the person that matches your business and that understands your business the best, yeah, they're few and far
between.
Do you put
them all in a pen together?
Yeah, and we throw in some colored markers and let them draw on the walls, and we'll see what comes out.
Sounds terrific. I've actually got to come and see your offices. You've got this very sexy building, which is just at the Buccleuch interchange.
Yeah, yeah. So you can actually see it from the freeway. And
I know sometimes I get stuck in traffic and I have to look at it for a whole half hour.
Which is a good thing, right? Which is a good thing. Yeah, so I think our offices are pretty cool. I think it's... you know, insurance businesses can be super boring, but I think it's quite a fun environment. You know,
well,
I think
it's one of the reasons we like to talk to you.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
All right, so Sven, let's get to the business.
Yeah,
everybody's talking about this national health insurance, and I've heard various people who I regard as being, fairly clued up. Mm. Tell me, there's no way we can afford this.
So I think something that you touched on right in the beginning is probably one of the most important messages that people should take away today. National health insurance, whether it happens or not, so you can either be a hater or buy into it, it is going to have an absolute profound effect on every single South African. And I think this is one of those examples where the philosophy of universal healthcare for all is great. Can the implementation actually occur, and are there challenges? Yes, absolutely, there's challenges. But the reality is, and this is the same with many pieces of legislation that are being promulgated, it's going to happen. It's just a question of when is it going to happen? Is it going to work or not? So our view on it is rather embrace the philosophy and rather try and make it work rather than be resistant and just say, it's simply not going to work. So develop an ETOL philosophy.
Is there a consensus between insurance companies when it comes to health insurance companies around the NHI?
Yeah, so I think there's certain fundamental challenges that NHI faces. You mentioned the affordability part of it. And through the various iterations of the NHI green paper, and there's been two white papers. I brought one along today. It's like 80 pages.
I sent it to me last night.
So you obviously read it.
Oh, Are you? I first page and I was asleep.
Well, there you go. Who needs sleeping tablets, right?
This is why
just read the NHI white paper. No, and there you go.
You're here to help us. You're our filter.
Yeah.
You're going to give us the salient
exactly,
points.
Exactly, I will. So just going back, is there consensus? So there's consensus that it's got challenges. There's that consensus. Yeah. But is it the right thing to do for South Africa? Absolutely, I think it is. I think just because of the inequality, you know, the parity between rich and poor, I definitely think that there is a place for it.
Yeah.
And provided we can, and this is going to be the central theme of what I'm going to talk about, is to say provided that business and government can partner in order to make it work, or at least give it a good shot, I think we're in with a possibility. But certainly at the moment, historically, it's been a question of the government and legislature trying to ram a piece of philosophy and legislation down everyone's throats.
Never going to work.
And that's not going to work, right? So that's the pushback.
You actually have a role outside of One Plan. You're on some board of people who are, I don't know, in control of the health insurance industry.
Like the Illuminati for insurance.
Sort of, yeah, you're a member of this. What is it?
No, so there's something called the South African Insurance Association.
Right.
And as part of that, there's various forums within the South African Insurance Association. I sit as the chairman of one of those forums.
Okay.
And that forum in particular deals with something called the demarcation regulations and to try and demystify that, that word. I suppose what government is trying to do is say there is this disconnect between what medical schemes are, what health insurance is. So how do we create a unified approach to what that is? And that ties into NHI because the way medical schemes and health insurers are thought to move, and that's towards a more unified solution, well, that's eventually going to tie in with NHI because what Aaron Motsoaledi has said is that initially, it was a matter of government's going to do this on their own. We've got this. We're going to lump everyone with some taxes.
Yeah, sure. Like they had Eskom and SAA, and everything they've touched has turned horrendous. So yeah. Let's just trust them with this one because they're
exactly.
bound to do this right.
But there certainly has been a paradigm shift from that philosophy to now. All of a sudden, they've understood that there has to be a partnership between medical schemes and corporate and government. And it goes back to what's one of the biggest challenges that NHI faces but for the financing issue, which, you know, we've seen now that there's major gaps in our fiscus that they're trying to bridge with increasing the VAT rate, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the primary issues, and this is subjective, this is my view, this isn't a view that's been heralded by everyone, but, you know, the philosophy is great, but shouldn't we start at grassroots? You know, how's NHI going to work if there's major issues in terms of service delivery, in terms of hospitals, in terms of staffing, in terms of training, etc.? And yes, sometimes you need the philosophy as a starting point in order to drive the right behavior. But in my view, we're kind of lacking the right infrastructure in order to get there. That's part of the difficulty. So yes. Private public partnership is very necessary, and I think where we should be starting is use that partnership in order to fix what's not working at the moment.
Well, that's a hell of a task because you've already pointed out, you know, state hospitals, clinics. We know what's just happened in the Northwest with Supra Mahumapelo and these Gupta clinics. I mean, it just seems to me that really the government can't run anything properly, and anything that's even remotely parastatal gets ruined.
Yeah.
And sent into debt, and the public end up paying for it. So who would pay for the national health insurance?
Well,
where is this money going to come from?
Yeah, the simple answer is we would. So there's various funding mechanisms that have been suggested, but the most obvious one is raise taxes. You know, that's how you're going to get there. That's how you're going to get to the 250 billion rand that they need in order.
250 billion rand, this is not a small amount of money. In any country, but in ours, where we have a depressed economy, where we have huge unemployment, this is going to be a tax too far for a lot of people. Now, isn't it sensible in any situation to let people decide for themselves? If I want to come to One Plan and let you guys cover my health insurance, and I'm prepared to pay whatever it is that you quote me, then that's my voluntary entry into the market, and I'm covering myself by coming to you. If I don't want it and I can't afford it, then I don't get health insurance.
Yeah. So I mean, what you've just touched, I'm obviously speaking with two hats here. The one is kind of the understanding the regulatory framework, and the other one is my, you know, corporate commercial hat. But yeah, that is the cornerstone of what we believe as health insurers. We're saying that, you know, we buy into the socialistic aspect of what medical schemes and,
well,
you know.
I don't.
Yeah,
I think it's bullshit.
Well, yeah, well, so do we. You know, we think it's crap because if you are younger and healthier and you have a very good risk profile, why should you be penalized for someone that's older and more sickly? I mean,
why should Sia have to pay for 20 other people's healthcare because he's earning money and they're not? Right?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and that's our entire viewpoint about why medical schemes and NHI, whilst great in philosophy, might be flawed when you look at an individual's risk profile, but also affordability.
So how likely is it that this is going to happen in the next 2 years, 5 years, 10 years?
Yeah, well, let me give you the chronological pathway that has been suggested in the white paper. So by 2013, we should have a 2030.
Oh, 30.
We're not going back in time. This is back to the
future.
Sorry,
Aaron,
my bad.
Lady's built a time machine.
My bad.
Okay,
the DeLorean.
2030?
Yeah. So by 2030, we should have a fully functioning NHI system.
Now, 12 years from now?
Well, that's the point.
What's the bet they can't even get Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital working by 2030?
You know, and so again, it goes back to what I said earlier. The only way you're going to get on this path of even trying to remotely hit the 2030 date, you know, you've got to work with corporates. You've got to work with, you know, what's working at the moment, private healthcare facilities, in order to try and bridge that gap. And yes, there has been an attempt by government. They've started this forum, created this forum called NEDLAC. And that is supposed to be a partnership between corporates and government. They're supposed to sit down and have a look at the white paper, the philosophy, and try and work get to a more realistic model of implementation.
Do you get the impression in your interactions with government, and I don't want you to prejudice yourself in any way here, but when you interact with government, do you get the impression that they actually take you seriously, that they consider you equal partners in this, or do you think they look at you as a tap of money they can turn on if they need it and turn off when they don't?
Yeah, you know, what I think it is, I think there's so many legacy issues as a result of this butting of heads between corporate and government. I think, you know, one needs to deal with that first before they take us seriously. I think there's just so much pushback where there's, and I mentioned this earlier, where legislation, philosophy is trying to be driven down onto business, and business kind of going, well, screw you. Like, we're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
And
forget business, the average citizen.
Average citizen, you know.
People don't trust politicians. Most people in this country don't vote. They don't care about the system, and they're not interested in being part of it.
Like, I use the ETOL scenario, but it's the one that comes to mind. That's a perfect example.
So tell me the parallels between this and ETOL that you see.
Well, I mean, the parallels just being that it's great. There's a philosophy around what could work, what may be the right thing to do in order to drive revenue generation, et cetera, et cetera. But there's been no buy-in by people. So what do? They attack the legislation. They just boycott the entire idea of ETOLs and they just say, well, screw you. We're just not going to do it. And ultimately, it's you know, the government with egg on their face by saying we don't have a piece of legislation.
Yeah, what are you going to do? I mean, you can't go around and hold everyone at gunpoint to be a part of NHI.
Yeah, well, and also the odds are stacked against us. And have a look at these other countries like Brazil that have implemented NHI or the NHS in the UK and all the states that have tried with Obamacare for years.
Okay, let's talk about a foreign example. Is there a sterling example that when you look at it, if you were a legislator, if you had to put your – if you were Aaron Motsoaledi, let's say, you had his hat on and you had to be the Minister of Health – in South Africa, and you had to try and find a way to incorporate more people into the healthcare system and make it possible for people to have affordable healthcare or free universal basic healthcare. Is there a country, a place, a city? Is there anything that you could think of that is a great shining example of where this works?
Yeah, so I speak under correction, but there are certain first world countries or first world economies where it has worked, but there the fundamental difference is there wasn't a huge funding issue. So Brazil is probably the most likened to what we are trying to do, and I can't speak with an amount of authority about whether the Brazilian NHS or NHI works, kind of what I've read is that it doesn't. So I think what we've done is we've tried to take principles, when I say Department of Health, is try to take principles from various other systems and build a philosophy around what it should look like. And, you know, now we're at the stage of, well, what does the implementation look like? So I haven't really answered your question, but.
No, because there isn't an answer, I don't think.
Yeah.
And certainly I have yet to hear of an example where it works. I've got friends who live in the UK and use the NHS. They have nothing but complaints.
Well,
they hate it.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, that hasn't necessarily resulted in a huge downturn in private healthcare. People still want private healthcare because they want to jump the queue. I don't want to sit at a government hospital for months trying to get their pinky fixed, you know.
Well, you hear horror stories.
Yeah, well, so one horror story, and to talk about the inequalities in South Africa. So if you look at the total health expenditure in South Africa, mm-hmm. a frightening statistic is that 50% of the total health expenditure is expended by 16% of the population.
So
I'm going to get to a point.
We're not very good at maths, so just go through that again.
Yeah, yeah.
16% of the people use up?
50% of the total health expenditure.
Who are these 16%? Are these very, very ill people?
No, so it's when you look at medical schemes, right? Medical schemes, private health.
Right.
So it's like 8.8 million people that mm-hmm. enjoy the benefit of medical schemes or
in this country.
In this country.
Right.
It kind of leaves like 45 million people
outside of it.
That are outside of it. And that kind of strengthens the point of health insurance as a concept versus medical schemes as a concept, because what we say is, guys, what about the other 47 million people? How do they afford some sort of access to private healthcare? And that's what health insurance does. So health insurance is a concept. We look at the individual. We risk rate them. We can drive down premiums. You don't have this prescribed.
This is where Mabali is more expensive than Sia because she's got the asthma.
Yeah.
Asthma.
Exactly. Yeah. The asthma. The Luke.
So how do those 16 – I'm very, very concerned.
16%.
Those 16% take up more than half of the money.
Crazy, eh?
What are they doing? Are they going for elective surgeries?
But look at the converse. What are the other people not doing?
They're healthy for a start.
No, well, they don't have access to healthcare. That's the problem. So if you look at the other – you know, 84% or whatever it is, that those guys they just aren't able to access private or healthcare in general. So you have like another aspect that sets South Africa apart from anyone else is this quadruple disease burden that we have, HIV, TB, and that's something we need to deal with on a more grassroots level rather than looking at NHI for all, you know. So how do we tackle those issues first before we look at implementing a philosophy?
I get very nervous when we think about things like life estimani, and we see how that was handled, and we think, well, you know, it'll all be good if government has the controls at their disposal and they can make our decisions about our health for all of us. We'll be better off. Who would think that based purely on the experience of the last couple of months? And I don't think Aaron Motsoaledi is a horrible human being. I don't think he's a bad guy. I think he genuinely cares about people. But the things he's put in place, like this dumb sugar tax, which has done nothing to stop obesity, and will do nothing. Well, it's just a stealth tax.
Yeah, but isn't it an endemic problem generally that we have in South Africa?
Well,
it's just the lack of governance and control.
Yeah, but it's also that no one can be responsible for your health but you. And unfortunately, that means you're going to have to try and make money to pay for your health care when you need it. And if you can't afford insurance, you've got to find a way. You've got to find a way. No one's going to do this for you.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I suppose, you know, the proponents or advocates of NHI would say, well, that is exactly the reason why we need NHI. Because there's so many people that can't afford it. And, you know, so one of the main features of NHI is supposed to be primary healthcare.
Yes.
So what primary healthcare is, it's that initial engagement at a healthcare facility. So GPs, visits, preventative care, etc. And the idea is, well, if you sort that out, then it'll prevent all, you know, well, firstly, it'll reduce the quadruple burden of disease, but it'll also reduce the amount of treatment that you might require later on, which is really what spikes the health expenditure. So the accidents, the dread disease, etc., etc., etc. So that is what a prominent feature of NHI is.
Now, what do they want from you? I mean, do they want you guys to throw in with them?
Yeah. So that's what the suggestion in the last
white paper is. They want you to just go to your clients and say, hey guys, we know you've been paying for X and Y and Z, but now we're all going to be incorporated into the NHI.
Yeah, that's
so all that money you've been paying, sorry, it's going into the NHI.
Yeah, so the way I understand
how do they figure that's going to work?
No, it's crazy. And it was also – so one of the suggestions previously that was made, which is, again, quite frightening. So medical schemes work on a solvency rate. What that means is that every single medical scheme by law needs to have 20% of the total benefit contributions as a safety net, right? So that's not anyone else's money but the members' money. So that's 20% of total claims that sits there as reserves. And the suggestion previously by the Department of Health is, well, why don't we just use that?
It's not your money.
Well, it's not your money. You know, and it's those kind of suggestions that kind of make you think, well, hold on, like, are we doing this the right way? I mean, if that's the kind of suggestion, then I'm pretty worried about it. But what did we speak about a second ago?
Want to take the members' contributions and convert that into NHI.
So the way in which I see the philosophy developing is that things like health insurance and medical schemes are meant to fill the gap rather than be the primary form of cover. So it'll be NHI. So you have benefits that you will derive from NHI. And to the extent that there's a shortfall, then you can rely on your medical schemes or health insurance.
You know, it almost feels like when I'm sitting with my four-year-old nephew and I have to explain to him, that is your sucker and that is your brother's. And his brother's two and he wants both suckers. And I'm like, no, 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 that one's his. This one's yours. You've got to be fair. And he got given that one, so it belongs to him. And this one you got given, it belongs to you. You have to sit down with these government guys and explain to them, like, no, that is not your money. That's those people's money.
And that's, you know, I really don't want to undermine.
It's just madness,
right? You know, but that's kind of, it's crazy. This isn't my view on things. This is what the documents suggest is the case, which is a little bit worrying.
It's a bit utopian.
Well, it is. And that's what I said right in the beginning, right? So it's a great philosophy. Will it work in practice? Possibly, but it will require a whole lot of joint venture in order to make that work and kind of being real about what the problems are. I mean, there's in the latest version of the NHI white paper, there's about four pages talking about the problem statement. So what are the inherent problems that we have in South Africa? And they've identified some of them, but they haven't identified all of them. So
it's crazy.
Yeah,
it's great.
It's pretty crazy.
I know that you came here with a very balanced approach, and I may have forced you to argue one. Yeah, I may have forced you to argue one side more than the other, but I do not see how this could be based purely on what government's intentions are. I don't see how it could be effectively implemented, even by 2030. But I couldn't see this happening by 2080.
Yeah, so you know, I am a pipe dream. Well, I am actually a believer. I mean, you wouldn't say so just by the last couple of minutes, but I do believe that it is the right thing to do because of the inequalities that we have in South Africa. All I'm suggesting is that there's got to be a better way of doing it, and the better way of doing it has to be a partnership with business in order to make that work.
I'll tell you what, if you're going to rely on government, you're going to be disappointed like so many people have in the last little while. Therefore, you need to think about your own health, and I would suggest that you make sure that you are covered. Because you never know when something could happen, and you never know when it could happen to you. So, just to throw in a little bit of the commercial message here, Sven, I'll do this for you.
Thank you.
One Plan puts healthcare in the hands of you and individuals like you. They provide a great alternative for 80% of South Africans who can't afford traditional medical aid. One Plan products are easy to understand. The claims process is so uncomplicated. They can be processed within a minute using a mobile phone. Through a fast claims process, One Plan helps to get you better quickly. Remember, health insurance, which is what One Plan offers, is the supply of a lump sum that covers hospital care. If you're in an accident, you have a medical emergency or an operation, you're covered. It also covers GP and dentist visits and other medical needs based on your chosen plan. Health insurance is based on your needs. It also covers or offers cover that is usually unlikely to be covered by the medical aid, such as accidental cover, injury to your body, or death cover. The term is self-explanatory. It's taking out insurance on your health. To find out more, go to oneplan.co.za or SMS health to 31664 and One Plan will call you back. SMS health to 31644. for affordable health insurance from as little as 330 Rand a month. That's health to 31644.
Oh,
do you like my song?
Jesus.
And One Plan will call you back. Easy as that. Thank you, Sven. Nice to see you. Sven Lorencik from One Plan.
This is CliffCentral.com.